Waterford in Action, a climate discussion on WLR. This series is funded by Commission Amman with the television licence fee.
If you look at the 10 hottest years ever measured, they've all occurred in the last 14 years. And the hottest of all was 2005.
17 years ago, former Vice President of the US Al Gore warned us about the threat of climate change in a terrifying and Oscar-winning documentary called An Inconvenient Truth. At the time, some political and economic leaders ridiculed Gore for the message he was trying to get across to us. However, we now know that global warming is happening.
Evacuation alerts have spread to more areas of roads overnight as wildfires continue to advance. In their droves, tourists and locals have been forced
please,
to escape.
Please, this way!
Thousands moved onto the beach. It was impossible to get onto coaches because people just ran. It was literally like the end of the world. And the flames were now far more visible. Suddenly they were leaping flames into the sky.
In Europe this summer, we experienced record-breaking heat waves. In Ireland, we had hailstones in Enniscorthy, flooding in Tralee, all while witnessing severely high temperatures.
Most of Ireland has been drenched for the past month, but the scale of the downpours has set a dubious new record for the wettest ever July.
A heat warning for the entire country has come into effect and has been extended until 6 a.m. on Monday. Met Éireann has confirmed it's been a record hot day for August, with the highest temperatures of 31.7 degrees recorded at Oak Park.
Back in 2015, under the Paris Agreement, world leaders agreed to attempt to limit global temperature rises above pre-industrial levels to 1.5 degrees by the end of this century. Researchers now say that there's a 66% chance we will pass that 1.5 degree limit within the next 4 years. Instead, the world is hurtling towards a temperature rise of between 2.4 and 2.6 degrees Celsius. That's according to a United Nations Environment Programme report released last October. The world is getting hotter, and the results are catastrophic.
In Maryville, Louisiana, fire crews are in a race against time, trying to contain a massive wildfire that has burned nearly 12,000 acres.
Speaking at the COP27 last year and reacting to the news that the 1.5 degree limit is expected to be reached and surpassed within the next few years, former Irish president and leader of the elders, Mary Robinson, was visibly upset.
I'm saying to the leaders who are here now, this is on your watch. Sorry. It's so important. You know, we are literally talking about having a safe future. You can't negotiate with science. You can't talk about a glass being half full. We have to get it down. We have to be on track for 1.5, and it is doable.
Mary, I can see how you're reacting.
Yeah.
To this news that we are on track for 2.4. Yep. At 2.4, we say goodbye to parts of the world, don't we?
Saying goodbye to parts of the world? Is that really what we want for our children? Over the next 10 weeks, we will be speaking to people in Waterford who are trying to make sure that we do not have to say goodbye to certain parts of the world by making changes big and small to reduce climate change and sustain the long life of this planet that we call home.
Episode 1. Growing Your Own.
We all need food to survive. However, over the past 100 years, the way we acquire and consume food has changed dramatically. Supermarkets have gotten bigger. Local producer numbers have dwindled. And our diets are no longer restricted to native in-season foods. One Waterford man who's on a mission to reverse those trends is Michael Kelly, owner and founder of GIY and Grow HQ.
There's a wisdom in seasonal eating, I think, that we've kind of disconnected from a lot. We have this kind of mono diet where we eat the same thing throughout the year, you know, whereas actually the way we would have eaten traditionally was to follow a sort of an arc of the seasons, from the sort of, you know, the leafy abundance we see around us in the spring, fruiting crops in the autumn, root crops in the winter, things that grow underneath the ground and back around again.
Michael had a life-changing moment a number of years ago when he picked up a piece of garlic in his local supermarket and realised that it had been imported from China.
It all kind of started back in early 2000s, I guess. I was working in IT at the time, I had kind of just moved back to Waterford, and like at the time I was kind of not really thinking about where my food was coming from, and I had a kind of road to Damascus moment in the supermarket. Some garlic I was about to throw into the trolley and noticed it said it was from China, and I always kind of think if it had been Spanish garlic I might be still working in IT.
Another way that we can help the environment is ensuring that, when we can, the meat that we eat be as local and sustainable as possible. Veganism has seen a huge increase in popularity in recent times. However, as someone who's been a vegetarian for over 30 years, I'm not convinced that this recent trend is going to save the world. People love to eat meat, and sustainably sourced local meat is far better for the environment than processed vegan food imported from another country.
I think people don't use, you know, common sense and something simple, right? The mountains have been untouched for generations. The mountains as they are 200 years ago, 300 years ago.
Willie Drowan, along with his business partner Aidan Dunwoody and his wife Bridget and five children, runs Cumara Mountain Lamb, based here in Waterford. Their lambs roam free range over extensive areas of the Cumara Mountains, grazing on wildflowers, heather and mountain grass, giving them a far more varied and biodiverse diet than their lowland counterparts.
Cumara Lamb started back in 2008. We were supplying the Bingham meat factories years before that, and myself and my brother-in-law in Dodie, we decided to set up our own small little business to sell, see could we sell our lamb first, or was there an interest in mountain lamb. The first man we approached was Michael Quinn from Waterford Castle. He was in Waterford Castle that time, and there was a festival coming to Waterford, Terra Madre, which was a slow food festival, and we approached Michael, Aidan approached Michael, and Michael said he'd use two lambs for that festival.
Episode 2, A Pile of Old Rubbish.
Welcome into episode 2 of our 10-part series on the climate emergency and Waterford people who are working to combat it. This week, we're focusing on rubbish. What we do with it, how we dispose of it, how we generate it, how we can reduce it, and what we can do to transform spaces that used to store it.
Rolling down the road.
I can remember vividly as a child going on trips to the dump with my father, where literally anything we didn't want or need was chucked into a big hole in the ground. Thankfully, things are changing, and as a society, we're moving away from landfill and moving more towards recycling and composting.
Four big dump trucks rolling down the road.
The EPA tells us that the amount of rubbish that we send to landfill has fallen dramatically over the past decade. Just 16% of everyday rubbish from homes and businesses went to landfill in 2020, compared to 58% in 2010. But it's not all good news. We still dump more than 500,000 tonnes of rubbish into landfill each year. And the EPA has warned that we're running out of space for our rubbish. Officials say they may have to lift a decade-old ban on new landfills, while others believe that incineration is the way to go. It seems the problem is that while we're moving away from landfill and towards recycling, we're now generating more waste than ever.
We're a country of shoppers. Yeah, we really are. And I suppose that's one of the things that would be good to reduce a bit more.
Ella Ryan is the Environmental Awareness Officer with Waterford City and County Council. She says Irish people consume way more stuff than our EU neighbours, and this means that we've more stuff to throw away, including old and unwanted items and the packaging that the new items come in. She says it's something we have to reduce.
So it's not that you're supporting less businesses, it's just that you would be buying more services.
If I was to ask you, while you're listening to this, to take a guess at how many operational landfill sites there are in the country that are currently accepting waste, what would you say? Over 100? Under 100? Pick a number. The actual number of landfill sites left in this country is 3. That is down from 28 in 2010. Originally, Waterford also had 3 landfill sites. one in Kilbarry, one in Tramore and one in Dungarvan. All three have been shut down and have been transformed into public parks. Waterford City's former landfill site at Kilbarry stopped taking waste in 2005 and in 2012 was opened as the Waterford Nature Park.
You know, so by putting in footpaths around it and landscaping the footpath across the top of it, we put in biodiversity-friendly planting. The top of it is maintained as a sort of wildflower meadow. So it's creating areas of habitat for the insects and other fauna or whatever that is wasn't there in Waterford. It's a great resource then for people can use and loads of people do use it on a daily basis.
Welcome into episode 3 of our 10-part series on the climate emergency and Waterford people who are working to combat it. In this week's episode, we focus on biodiversity. What is it and why is it so important?
I think it was President Higgins said they're the canaries in the coal mine, you know, so these species are telling us that things are changing.
Biodiversity is a word we've been hearing a lot of recently, but what exactly does it mean?
Biodiversity is the variety of plant and animal life in the world or in a particular habitat, a high level of which is usually considered to be important and desirable.
So we know that plant and animal life is important for the environment, but why is it important in relation to the climate emergency?
You don't have to be a scientist anymore to see what's happening. You just have to look out your window and see what's going on in the world to understand that things are changing, and to some degree they're changing a lot faster than perhaps people were expecting.
Dave Wall is the Citizen Science Officer with the National Biodiversity Data Centre, which is based here in Waterford. The centre collects and collates data on every species in the country, be it marine or terrestrial, plant or animal. As Dave says, they collect information on everything from bacteria to a blue whale. I ask him, what is biodiversity and why is it important?
Well, biodiversity is everything. It's all life. The easiest way to describe it is everything from a bacteria to a blue whale. And we have both in Ireland. You may not believe me, but we do.
When people hear the sound of buzzing bees, some feel panic or fear at the thought of being stung. Others think of a wild meadow on a summer's day. And others, like me, think of delicious honey spread on thick white bread and butter. Mmm. In fact, all bees are a hugely important part of the country's ecosystem, as they pollinate food crops as well as wildflowers and trees. In Ireland, crops such as apples, strawberries, raspberries, tomatoes, blackcurrants, peppers, courgettes and pumpkins are all reliant on bees for pollination. They're an unpaid workforce. In fact, a recent study from the Department of the Environment found that bees are worth $53 million a year to the economy. But in 2006, the Red Bee List was published. This is an internationally recognised method for assessing the conservation status of a species. It found that 30% of the Irish bee species are threatened with extinction. 6 species are critically endangered, 10 are endangered, and 14 are vulnerable. Yet we still have hundreds of people across the country who keep bees in hives, in gardens, community centres, men's sheds. In fact, the first association of beekeepers was established in Ireland in 1881. The Southeast branch has been running since 1957 and they currently have 81 members. Donal Lahan is the chairperson of the local association.
Well, as a child, I helped my aunt, who had arthritis, to lift boxes and things as a young child. And then as a teenager, I kept some bees. But then I went working for Glanbia, and it was impossible to have bees and work. When I retired, I went back into bees. They're interesting to watch, interesting to work with, and you're always learning. Yeah, well, bees were an important part of the economy in Ireland with small farmers. Every small farmer had, and as well as his ducks and his geese and his hens and cows and sheep and pigs, they had a few beehives. So it was part of the rural training and part of the rural way of life.
Episode 4. Getting there sustainably.
You're welcome into episode 4 of our 10-part series on the climate emergency and Waterford people who are working to combat it. This week, we focus on transport. Since Since the invention of the wheel in the 4th millennium BC, humans have been moving from one location to another, increasingly faster and more efficiently as time has passed. But there is a price to be paid, and transport is now seen as one of the major players when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions, having a hugely negative impact on the environment. According to the EPA, in 2021, the transport sector in Ireland was responsible for 17.7% of the country's greenhouse gas emissions, second only to agriculture. There has been a concerted effort for people to move towards electric vehicles in recent times. In fact, there's been electric vehicles on the road in Ireland since the 1970s. Here's a news report from the RTE archives from 1979.
There are between 500 and 600 electric vehicles in Ireland, mostly used for milk or bread deliveries. The concept isn't new. In the early 1900s, 40% of all vehicles manufactured in America were electric. But the popularity waned, and by 1924, they had almost completely disappeared off the roads.
Nowadays, there are more electric cars on the road than ever before, and there are lofty ambitions in this country in regard to electric targets. The Climate Action Plan aims to have 30% of the private car fleet switched to electric and 100% of new car registrations be electric by 2030. That's in just 7 years' time. Last year, only 15% of new private cars registered were electric, so we still have a long way to go. Waterford, however, is one of the highest counties when it comes to new electric cars, as Tom Cullen from the Society of the Irish Motor Industry explains.
This year so far, the market is up 54% in Waterford. That's 1.9% of the overall market in Ireland.
There are a number of initiatives in Waterford designed to encourage people to leave the car at home and use alternative transport.
People love their cars, and it is a difficult proposition.
One of those is the TFI bike rental scheme, which was launched last year in Waterford City. Keelan Morrissey is from Telforth, the company that operates the bike scheme for Transport for Ireland.
We've seen a great uptake of the scheme since its inception, but I have to say, especially with the launch of the Waterford scheme, that was exceptionally good for us. That exceeded our initial expectations, and over the year that has continued.
Episode 5. Reducing our carbon footprint.
Welcome into episode 5 of our 10-part series on the climate emergency and Waterford people who are working to combat it. In this week's episode, we discuss the carbon footprint. What does it mean? How is it measured? And how can we reduce ours? The term carbon footprint may be familiar to many of you listening, and often it's associated with travel, particularly air travel. However, the definition of a carbon footprint is the amount of greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide and methane, released into the atmosphere as a result of any activity of a particular individual, organisation or community, in order for that activity to take place or for a product to be produced. Reducing our carbon footprint within our home may be one thing that we have control over. However, once we leave our homes, we also have control over the services that we use and the service providers that we engage. That too can reduce our carbon footprint. One initiative that is being backed by government is the idea of remote working.
This is a St. Patrick's Day like no other, a day that none of us will ever forget. We're in the middle of a global and national emergency, a pandemic, the likes of which none of us have seen before. Large public gatherings are cancelled, all pubs and bars are shut, and we've asked people to curtail or cancel social gatherings like parties, weddings and other celebrations.
In March 2020, Ireland experienced its first national lockdown as part of the fight to combat COVID-19, and our lives and this country changed forever. Working from home became the new normal for so many people during that time. But since then, the trend has reversed, and the majority of people are now back in an office-based scenario. However, remote working hubs are still thriving across the country, and they're good for the environment.
Quite simply, we're in a place today which is neither your home nor my home, and both of us have to commute to get here. Everybody that commutes to a given spot is a carbon footprint creator, let's be honest. And therefore, if people can use remote working hubs on a constant and consistent basis, then it is a significant reducer in carbon. And unless we hear otherwise, it is a very efficient way of producing a workflow and a work content that most people want.
Richie Walsh is the Rural Development Officer with Waterford City and County Council. He says remote working hubs are not only good for the environment, but they're also good for productivity. And people seem to have forgotten that since the return to the office-based system.
Why is the reversal happening? Because, let's be honest, the overall economy thrived to a certain extent during COVID when we should have been expecting a collapse. Productivity remained really, really high in everything across both commercial and public sector companies. And at the same time, you're right, we're now reversing. Now, the only reason, as far as I'm concerned, that we are reversing is not necessarily evidence-based. It's more based on a feeling that the office-based entity is a more efficient, centralised, sort of better option for everybody, including the employee.
Episode 6. Alternative energy.
Welcome in to episode 6 of our 10-part series on the climate emergency and Waterford people who are working to combat it. Last week, we discussed the carbon footprint and how we can reduce ours. And we learned that by cutting our energy consumption, we can greatly reduce our carbon footprint. We heard from Niamh, whose home in West Waterford is a passive house, using almost no energy to run.
So we don't have air to water, we don't have oil, we don't have gas, we don't have underfloor heating, we don't have anything, bar this kind of compact system, but it's all very intelligent, very efficient.
This week, we will discuss the energy crisis, and we look at Waterford people who are embracing various forms of alternative energy in an attempt to reduce climate change. As we face into the winter months, many of us will worry about how we're going to bring heat and light to our homes and businesses during the darker, colder period. Energy costs are at an all-time high in this country, despite recent reductions, and many people will struggle to pay their energy bills this year. There's uncertainty regarding the availability of certain fuels due to foreign conflict and depleting sources. An SEAI report last year found that oil remains the dominant source of residential energy demand in Ireland. And in 2021, oil accounted for 41% of all home energy use, followed by electricity at 25% and gas at 19%.
In terms of our CO2 production, we're probably at the very bottom of Europe. We're the laggard of Europe. I don't think that's news to anybody. It's been well documented in the media over the last number of years. We're just not doing enough. That the government's focus on this hasn't been where it should be.
Owen Power, along with his brother Cormac, established an energy company here in Waterford in 2005 that aims to address the world's energy challenges head on by harnessing the power of renewable sources to fuel the country's businesses.
Episode 7, Protecting Our Coastline.
Welcome in to episode 7 of our 10-part series on the climate emergency and Waterford people who are working to combat it. This week, we focus on one of the most powerful resources that we as a county have at our fingertips. Our coastline. County Waterford has a massive coastline that is 147 kilometres long, boasting around 50 beautiful beaches and coves all along the way, from Passage East to Calisso Bay. The sea is used for employment, transport, entertainment. It gives us food and peace. It locks in carbon, reduces stress, and every now and then it shows off its power with spectacular displays of force.
We are keeping a little bit of a distance and we are concerned for our own safety.
Episode 8. Making a fashion statement.
Welcome in to episode 8 in our 10-part series on the climate emergency and Waterford people who are working to combat it. This week's episode will focus on the fashion industry and the impact that what we wear is having on the environment. The next time you pop into a shop to pick up a cheap item of clothing that you know you'll only wear a handful of times, just remember these staggering figures. Up to 100 billion garments are produced by the fashion industry every year. And each year, as much as 92 million tons of clothing ends up in landfill. Second-hand shops are now a booming business and are so good not only for picking up bargains, but for keeping items of clothing in circulation for longer. Claire Walsh is the manager of the Vintage Factory in Waterford City.
We have suppliers that are all over the world. Mostly our stock is from America and Germany and Italy and Amsterdam. It comes from all over, but they are probably the biggest stockists for us. Some things are unworn, but they are all vintage. So vintage clothes, it means things are 20 years back, if you know what I mean. So unfortunately, like, that means Y2K, like the year 2000, is classed as vintage, which is really depressing, but it is. So we stock a bit of Y2K, but 90s is pretty big, 80s is pretty big. We go back as far as the 1960s. Honestly, we get all ages. They're mostly popular with sort of teenagers and 20-year-olds, but one of our best customers is a woman in her 80s.
Episode 9, A Greener Community.
Welcome into episode 9 of our series on the climate emergency and Waterford people who are working to combat it. In this episode, we highlight Waterford community groups who are playing their part by making small challenges to save this planet. If you look around you on a daily basis, there is evidence all around of the amazing community groups that we have in this county. Tidy towns, scout groups, charities, men's shed, community gardens, we have them all. And most, if not all, are driven by volunteers who work within these groups for nothing but the love of it. When it comes to the environment, Waterford doesn't disappoint. And local community groups are leading the way in many communities when it comes to tackling the climate emergency.
It's great that they can be an example for their community of how possible it is for everyday people to make really impactful actions that support Ireland reaching its climate action targets and its biodiversity targets.
Susan Lee is the Community and Climate Action Officer with Waterford City and County Council. She says that community groups are perfectly poised not only to play their part in helping the country reach its climate targets, but also by playing a pivotal role in driving change at a community level.
They're actually perfectly placed to take climate action, and in many cases some already have.
Episode 10, Education is Key.
When I was growing up, we learned about nature in school, how to identify the leaves of different trees, how frogs spawn and how bees live. However, those idyllic nature classes don't seem like they will cut it when it comes to educating about the environment these days. It is a much harsher lesson that we need to teach. However, educators often comment how there's a thin line between educating people and making them aware of the crisis we face, and scaring the living daylights out of them, and thus any hope for the future. But are young people themselves really concerned with global warming and the environment? And if they're not, how do we teach them to be? By lecturing at them that the world is going to end? Possibly not.
Teaching nature in a school is very difficult. The education system isn't built for it. So I think what's really interesting is that when we actually dig down on this, it's absolutely bonkers the way we've set everything up.
So we are getting something right, and also there are a number of teaching institutions across Waterford that are also getting it right, as you see examples in schools, both primary and secondary, of small changes like wormeries, outdoor classrooms and recycling initiatives. One school that is really blazing the trail is Ballycoran National School in County Waterford, which I visited earlier this year. There I met with staff and students who demonstrated some amazing examples of how to teach about nature and environment in an interactive way. The principal of the school is Kevin Goff, who says they incorporate biodiversity into all of their lessons. But the impetus is really set by the students themselves.
They're always coming in and telling us about what they're doing at home and things like that as regards the environment. In school, then we try and copy some of the things that they're doing at home. For example, maybe their garden, their wild gardens, their rubbish and things like that. So we try and incorporate into the lessons in school.
Thank you so much for listening to this 10-part series on the climate emergency. We hope that you've learned at least one thing that will encourage you to make some changes in your life that will protect the future of this planet. My thanks also to all of the people who have spoken to me so passionately about the work that they are doing all across Waterford. You truly are champions. Have a happy Christmas. And remember, we do not own this planet. We're only one of thousands of species that live on it. Let's keep it that way.
Waterford in Action, a climate discussion on WLR.